supporting a UN program for human development, on top of providing food, clothing, shelter, basic medical care, and a basic education for every poor person on the planet, 10% of the U.S. military budget, another 10% on top of that, for a total of 20% of the U.S. military budget, or 10% of the global military budget, would provide a welfare check for every poor person on Earth to lift them to the poverty level for the country they're living in. And people in service industries, think about it. These are economic stimuli. But why is it that we live in a world where they think that fighting terrorism is an economic stimulus for the defense industry, but feeding people, educating people, giving children child care, and giving poor people the right to escape misery by just giving them some pocket change, get above the poverty level for the country they're living in, is not an economic stimulus.
They'll only spend it on drugs, David, you know that.
They'll spend it on movies, they'll spend it on books, they'll spend it on television, they'll spend it on clothing for their children. They'll spend it on freedom, they'll spend it on being a human being.
It's interesting, with the... with the massive privatization that is going on all over the world, essentially it's the few ripping off the many, as you know. I talked to the husband of a teacher who's deserting the Watsonville educational system. Says the teachers locally are resigning in droves because of the standardized tests that are being initiated. And in his perspective, this is the attempt, in essence, of private capital to essentially loot the public system, because what happens is, if you don't make the teachers are not really able to teach at individual levels now, is what his claim was, and therefore people fail the tests and they're told, well, you have to go to private schools, but private schools apparently are exempt from passing these tests. Private schools can provide their own standards, so it becomes a situation where the last significant socially used money, the public school system, is now about to be looted by private interests. This is what was brought to my attention the other day. It's not directly relevant to what you're saying, but it seems to be part of this general pattern. So
we all got to put that in perspective too, right, Robert? I mean, California, even in America, we're ranked like 43rd in spending, in spending per student. We're at the bottom. We're at third world levels in California on what we as adults spend on our children for their education. All of these games, standardized tests, teaching to the test, none of this is going to make any sense until we fund education as something less than the bottom 5% of the country nationally.
So getting back to Santa Monica, I agree with you, but getting back to Santa Monica, here in Santa Cruz, we have a sleeping ban, which criminalizes poor people for sleeping outside or in their vehicles, and essentially makes 95% of the homeless people subject to $54 tickets every night. And there's been increasing crackdowns, police crackdowns, against not only people downtown, but people who are trying to shelter themselves under a tent or just lie under a bush with a sleeping bag. What's happening in Santa Monica around that? I know that you did have this rather kind of enlightened law, which was written by Bob Myers, the city attorney we mentioned before, that allowed people to, to sleep in vehicles in non-residential areas, and then if there was a complaint, they had half an hour to move or some such thing. Do you recall that law?
Well, if you are found sleeping in a vehicle in a residential zone in Santa Monica, you have a half an hour to move. They can't ticket you immediately, and that is one of the built-in protections that came with the law because it was written by somebody who was doing what they could. But right now, we're in a situation in Santa Monica where we're seeing the biggest increase in homeless hate in our community in Santa Monica than we've seen since 1992 when they did fire the city attorney. This is the biggest attack on homeless people in the last decade. And they are right now in Santa Monica trying to write a law to ban the feeding of homeless people in public parks.
but only
for
by
all intents and purposes to ban it. They're going to ban it by regulation.
Now wait a minute, only for outside agitators. They'll allow local food servers to serve. Why don't you just, you know, stop these communists from coming in and let your local folks serve the homeless?
Well, no, there isn't a single local church or synagogue in Santa Monica that you can go to and get an indoor meal during the week, or even that comes out into the parks during the week. There are one or two fundamentalist religious groups that are trying to shovel their fundamentalist religious propaganda on you, and they're just using food as the hook to exploit hungry and hurting people. But when it comes to a dinner, the countywide average for homelessness in L.A. County is 1%. The only way you can get three meals a day in Santa Monica is if you're one of the 455 people in city shelters. There is only one meal a day for homeless provided by the city if you're in Santa Monica. And there's only dinner provided by anybody, charitable or government, in Santa Monica 3 days a week if you're not one of those 455 people. Now, here's the thing. The population of Santa Monica is about 86,000 people. 1% of Santa Monica would be more like 850 people. They're not even feeding half their countywide average of 1% of the community, which is home with three meals a day, let alone sheltering them, let alone providing them with medical care, let alone providing them with transitional housing. And for this Santa Monica to be tolerating this campaign to say we've got too many homeless people, we need to restrict the feeding, it's a hate campaign, it's a violation of human rights, it's conscious, they just refuse to admit the truth. And I think what we need is, since we have a president that's calling for faith-based initiatives, I think this attorney general, instead of looking to profile every person who's not white, he ought to look into promoting his own president's policies and get the Justice Department down in these neoliberal cities like Santa Cruz, and get the Justice Department down in these neoliberal cities like Santa Monica, and get a Justice Department investigation against the real hate campaign against poor people that's going on in these tourist cities. It's a hate campaign that's the same level as the hate campaign against blacks in the South in the 60s. And yes, homeless people are being burned alive. Homeless people are being beat, kicked to death in places like Palmdale, California, Chicago. This is what's going on. And we have a president who says he wants to promote, his father said he wanted to promote a kinder and gentler world. This one says he wants to promote people's faith-based action. Why don't he get his attorney general to do some faith-based action to investigate the hate campaigns against poor people and the hate campaigns against neoliberal cities against charitable and community groups that do want to take him up on his offer? And that's what I want to know. Clinton wouldn't investigate these hate campaigns against homeless people during his 8 years. It would be very ironic if homeless people and poor people got a greater investigation into these things under a Republican and under this conservative attorney general.
The Right to Sleep Walk went through, did it go through Santa Monica? I know that it went from San Diego all the way to Sacramento about a couple months back, and we petitioned Governor Davis to decriminalize sleeping, to pay particular attention to not just the state 647J law, which makes it illegal to, quote, lodge. It's actually just used by some police agencies to harass homeless people on public property, but to go after cities that have municipal codes that criminalize sleeping or camping where there are no alternatives. Has Santa Monica, did they stop in Santa Monica?
They're doing just the exact opposite, so maybe the state attorney general needs to look at this also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, they arrested us in Sacramento when we tried to get the governor to declare that a law against sleep is a hate crime, and we're going back to face a trial. But there was, of course, good news. You may not have heard it, but in Sacramento, William McManus, or Billy, was found innocent by a jury on 3 counts of camping, actually on 1 with 2 hanging, but the question whether they'll retry, based on the necessity defense that he had to camp because he had to sleep, and there were no alternatives, and that his dogs, his need to protect his dogs and to take care of his stuff, because there was no alternative for him, was the basis for a jury of 12 people unanimously to agree that a preponderance of the evidence showed that it was a greater evil for this man to get up and leave, even though he was violating the camping law, than for him to stay and violate the law. That was won for the first time in Sacramento a week and a half ago.
It's a tremendous opening that we have a state court ruling in California from a few years back now that said that if you can show that you were sleeping in a public park by reason of necessity, you have, because there was no shelter, you tried to access shelter, that you can win a case in court. Ultimately, I think we need to go to groups like Amnesty International, because America is tremendously hypocritical. America is going to stand up and demonize other countries for the way they treat their poor and their refugees. And one of the reasons the rest of the world looks at us so truly is that we're not walking our talk when it comes to homeless people. And it's a tremendous scandal internationally for homeless people here.
You see much connection
to link up with those international groups like Amnesty.
Yeah, and the UN, I'd even propose in jest that we invite foreign observers from other countries who are accused of being human rights and who are human rights violators, like China and Cuba and even the hated Iraq, to come into the send some foreign observers in here to look at the human rights situation locally and embarrass.
We killed 500,000 children in Iraq in the last few years with a food embargo. Any questions on why they're bombing us? Any questions why they would want to bomb us? Think about it.
Well, there's no evidence. There's no evidence. The Iraq
observers. Yeah, we need international observers from Cuba to come here. This is a country living under a dictatorship where people get better medical care, and would get even better medical care if we didn't have that embargo. Mm-hmm. We need international observers from the European Union to come to the United States and look at the sorts of denial of human rights. Because basically we're facing global corporations, and it's going to be people linking up through global grassroots organizations that ultimately is going to be what's needed to oppose this global corporatization.
Well, we've been talking with David Busch down in Southern California on his dime, I might add, David. Thank you for spending the time and money to get in touch, and if I can help you with that, let me know. Kick down for at least half the cost of the phone call.
Well, I've been able to get a little bit of support from a few people in the community and to make these kind of calls every once in a while. And I think just we as homeless people, we need to talk about what's going on. We need to fight. We need to make phone calls like this. Even if you're homeless, you can get to a phone, and you're in the Santa Cruz area, call Mr. McPherson. He's one of about 14 people who's going to determine whether or not Californians will be sentenced to 6 months of forced government drugging.
That's AB 1421. Finally, we have the anniversary of the September 11th bombing in New York coming up, and of course of the Patriot Act, and, of course, the potential war in Iraq, which the media is being heated up for. Any comments on how that affects homeless people? And also in Santa Monica, whether there's much opposition to it, is the second question I have for you.
Well, we are seeing a building anti-war movement in this country, and a lot of people have said that at this stage in the Vietnam era, that there was not this much massive opposition to the bombing in Iraq, or to going to war against Iraq, or the bombing in Afghanistan. And so people, the good news is people are, I think, you know, people are getting involved in groups like the Global Solidarity Movement. They're getting involved, and they're saying, I want to go to Canada to protest the World Bank or the IMF or the Group of Seven and get involved in grassroots groups that are going to bring real democracy to America and to the rest of the world and fight global corporatization, which is the real enemy. They own our politicians. Corporations own our politicians. They own our democracy. And we're not going to have it unless we stand up in this global solidarity movement against these powerful forces globally that are robbing us.
It's ironic that people on the right are saying exactly the same thing. And, you know, I've heard this on the... Oh, yeah.
And what's happened is the corporations have bought off what America has traditionally been the left, the Democrats. They get just as much money as the Republicans. For everything they give you, they take something away. And people say, oh, you can't, you know, that there's a difference, you know, on big issues between Republicans and Democrats on things like abortion. But are we going to give away our right to food and medical care? For the right? For what? Should we have to? We're not living in a world where we have to make those kind of choices. And yet at the polling booth, that's what they're trying to make us do by limiting us to only two parties.
No, we don't even have an option at the polling booth on AB 1421. We have the option to call Senator Bruce McPherson before tomorrow morning and ask him to just say no to this bill that mandates forced drugging.
If you have the number handy, hold me on the line here. I'll come back in 3 minutes with that number.
All right.
Hold me on the line.
Okay. And we've been talking with David Bush of Santa Barbara. If you want to actually read more about his personal odyssey and how he has personally fought for homeless civil rights in Southern California, I've actually written about that in the newspaper Street Spirit, which you can get a copy of either by checking out the Downtown for All /Huff Table downtown in Santa Cruz, which is often around down there around 4:30, sometimes in front of Borders, sometimes in front of the Hat Company, sometimes in front of Candy Shoes, sometimes further down in front of the Cooper House. And indeed, I'll be around tomorrow at 4:30 in front of the across from the Cinema 9 in front of O'Neill's Surf Shop, where there's going to be some political soapboxing, and there's going to be some videos shown to folks there on the street about police abuse and police misconduct. And you can read about David Bush and what he did and how he squeezed some money out of the city of Los Angeles, forced Santa Monica to remove from public signs in Santa Monica no loitering, because loitering is the no loitering laws are unconstitutional, even though that's what Santa Cruz is trying to do with these anti-homeless forbidden zone laws. It's a way of essentially trying to stop people from loitering, and it's just similar to the way they're using police to intimidate people and have been for the last 6 months downtown. I was talking earlier in the show about headlines in the Sentinel and bias stories by Dan White, which is sort of old hat to those of us in Santa Cruz who have to pick up the paper every day. But the interesting bias, for example, in today's Sentinel talks about drug war stuff, but it doesn't mention that, actually it was yesterday's paper, it doesn't mention that all the busts on Pacific Avenue were marijuana for less than $2,000 or $3,000 of marijuana, and these people are getting 3 years probation, felony probation. Again, this massive use of overkill, sort of it reflects the kind of bombing overseas of populations, this determination to use a kind of force and fear and modern technology to deal with what? The fact that merchants are complaining that people are in front of their stores. Hi, David, you're back again?
I'm not ready yet.
Okay, well,
hold me on a little bit longer.
Right, well, you know, what we can do is I think we can find Senator McPherson's number here. Don't you worry about it. We're going to do that here. I don't want you to have to, you know, it should be easier here. It's in the phone book, for God's sake. So maybe somebody out there can find Senator Bruce McPherson's number and phone it into the studio.
That'd be great. And thanks for giving us a chance. Thanks for giving me a chance to have a little bit of a conversation with you today.
Oh, and
I know we covered a lot of territory, and there's been a lot of changes in Laura's Law, and some of it has confused folks. It's sort of difficult to track, but the bottom line is Bruce McPherson's going to vote on this thing tomorrow, and it will allow the state of California to sentence people to 6 months of forced government drugging based basically on the word of a police officer, and it should be opposed because it's going to cost the state money, and they need to take public testimony on that committee about what it's really going to cost the state, and they also need to realize that on the local level it's going to take money away from voluntary treatment and put it into involuntary treatment no matter what the bill says. Those are the 3 points to that I would encourage people to communicate to Mr. McPherson.
And I will repeat those points later. David, you also, very, very briefly before you leave, when you were last on the air, you had 3 different lawsuits going against the city, and I mentioned them while you were off about the muffin lawsuit, eating a muffin while sitting on the curb, which resulted in removing the no loitering from the signs in Santa Monica that had been posted. And you also had a face down with some folks in a museum with your unhoused sign, your little sign around your neck, that didn't find it and that picture perfect enough for you to come in. And then you were refused service at a Venice sports bar and actually assaulted there by various people, but you stood your ground and told the police you weren't going anywhere until they took a counter complaint from you, essentially a citizen's arrest of an individual for filing a false police report. Is that accurate?
Yeah, Robert, I'm a pacifist. I believe in nonviolent resistance, but I'm not passive. And I'm a pacifist who walks the talk. I've been a part of feeding homeless people in L.A. We were arrested for that. We fought as pacifists using direct action techniques, and we won $29,000 donation for Food Not Bombs in L.A. As a pacifist, I found myself arrested at a museum for simply having a sign around my neck that said unhoused. It was a sign that as a homeless person I wear because I get sick of the dirty looks that people give you for just being homeless, and I wanted to communicate a message, and I thought it was right in line with wearing a button or wearing a jacket with a corporate message on it. And I fought that as a pacifist and settled with the Getty Museum. They ended up making a $1,000 donation to a homeless group in L.A. As a pacifist in Santa Monica, I've been arrested about a dozen times. I've won several cases, defended myself many times, used the public defender to defend myself, because I believe it's our job. A job isn't what you get a paycheck for. A job is what you do to make the world a better place. And what the corporate world has done is perverted that and started giving us paychecks to hate one another, to exploit one another, to rip one another off. And if we have to eat out of a dumpster to do the real jobs on this planet, we got to count ourselves lucky. The fact is half the people on this earth today don't have access to clean water, and there's no excuse for that. We're producing enough food on this planet to feed every human being alive a 3,000-calorie diet. We need to fight. We need to fight as pacifists. If you're looking for examples for real change, look to people like Gandhi, look to people like King.
And look to people like David Busch. Thank you, David. Hope we can hear from you again soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Get on. Mexican land. Fought in the bloody Civil War. Yes, I even killed my brothers and so many others. But I ain't marching anymore. For I marched to the battles of the German trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. No, oh, I must have killed a million men and now they want me back again. But I ain't marching anymore. It's always the old to lead us to the war. Always the young to fall. Now look at all we've won with a saber and a gun. Tell me, is it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese sky. Set off the mighty mushroom rock. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't a marching anymore. When they close the missile plant, United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I ain't marching anymore. No, I ain't marching anymore.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. My apologies for what I learned was the uneven sound quality of the interview with David Busch. Really a pity, because that was a great interview. He had a lot of good things to say, lots of information, and it's too bad it wavered all over, according to my producer. However, getting back to the subject he was talking about, which is the Needles on Wheels bill that is coming up tomorrow for a vote at a key Senate committee, the Senate Appropriations Committee, you can now, if you've got a pencil and paper, write down and call or email Senator McPherson and tell him just say no to forced drugging, to a bill that will require essentially a cutback in mental health services that are voluntary and usable because the money will be going into these forced drugging deals, and to demand that the hidden costs be revealed before this bill is voted for. Vote, in essence, for voluntary treatment that has been proven effective, not for forced drugging that takes away basic constitutional rights and is really very nightmarish and 1984-ish. Again, the phone number is now, we're talking about Senator Bruce McPherson. The local phone number is 425-0401. 425-0401. That's Bruce McPherson locally, 425-0401. You can fax him if you're a faxer at 425-5124. 425-5124. If you want to save yourself money, and just maybe you're an internet person, his email address, Senator, S-E-N-A-T-O-R, Senator, dot McPherson, capital, sorry, all small letters, M-C-P-H-E-R-S-O-N, Senator, dot M-C-P-H-E-R-S-O-N, at S-E-N, for Senator, dot C-A, dot G-O-V, Senator, dot McPherson, at Sen, dot CAD.gov, Senator.McPherson at sen.ca.gov is the email address. And again, the phone number, just to give a quick local call to Senator McPherson and say no on AB 1421. No on AB 1421 is 425-0401. 425-0401. Give a call in. I'm going to be doing that as soon as the show's over. I urge all the rest of you to do it. It's very important that we be able to think without having our minds forcibly medicated, and not even for a, you know, sensible psychiatric purpose, but mainly as a function of this huge profit machine that the pharmaceuticals have been pushing, and ironically at the expense of other kinds of treatments and therapies that might help people who are in the mentally ill category.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and the phone lines are open. If you want to comment on anything you have heard, or possibly if you the sound dropped and you weren't able to hear some of the interview and you got some questions about what you missed, give a call to 427-3772. 427-3772. And we will take it away. So, I've been looking at the newspapers, and I found some rather grim things. Far afield, over there in the United Kingdom, in Britain, some stuff that kind of is definitely depressing. Here's a story from August 13th, Mercury News. London police began handing out on-the-spot fines Monday for offenses such as public drunkenness and making hoax emergency calls. The program was designed to curb antisocial behavior and reduce pressure on the courts. The instant fines can be paid by mail. The fines, fixed penalties of $60 or $120, depending on the seriousness of the offense, are being introduced in southern London and five other areas in Britain in a one-year trial. The power to impose fines might be extended to police across the country. The government says the fine system will relieve pressure on busy courts, where most people charged with public disorder offenses plead guilty and are fined. Fines can be given like parking tickets for threatening behavior, throwing stones at trains, trespassing on a railway, throwing fireworks, obstruction of the highway, and buying alcohol for children. Offenders will have to produce identification and can be arrested if that is believed to be false or if they refuse to take the ticket. If they deny the charge, they can elect to go to court for a full trial. Mark Littlewood, a representative of the civil rights group Liberty, said the fines gave the police unprecedented power as judge, jury, and executioner. But an officer in one of the pilot areas said issuing a ticket immediately would cut down on the paperwork and was unlikely to provoke greater hostility. That's by Jane Wardell, British Try Instant Penalties, Mercury News, August 13th. Of course, the problem with this whole thing, and not clear in this story, and again, not entirely clear to me either because I don't know and haven't read the actual laws or talked to anybody from Britain who's been involved with this system. I guess it's pretty new. Few will have been for a while, but it reminds me of what's happening in Santa Barbara, where because the police cannot arrest homeless people for sleeping in vehicles anymore because they will claim the necessity defense, and properly so, now they're going to try to use parking tickets to make them move on and get out of town, as, for example, Emily Riley did here a year ago when she passed her no public hearing, but here come the signs, no parking 5 to 7 a.m. in the morning to get rid of homeless people in the Harvey West who were in their vehicles there. They already had a law that allowed police to arrest someone sleeping in or living in a vehicle after 11 o'clock at night, but they didn't want to use that because that provides you with a potential trial, not a jury trial, unfortunately, because it's just an infraction, but a trial before a judge and constitutional court protections. Whereas your protections for parking tickets are much less, you have an administrative process, you have to post a bail, you have to do some. You have to write up a response, and you have to go to a number of administrative hearings, or at least attend to them. You don't have the same protections, the same court protections that you do with the criminal process. And of course, it's a way of short-circuiting the criminal process. So, the concern that you heard before David Busch talk about AB 1421, one of the reasons that it should be defeated is because it's going to put pressure on the courts. No doubt the next step is going to be issuing tickets instead of petitions. I mean, that's actually rather far-fetched because it seems like it's such a serious matter to have someone incarcerated in a drug straitjacket for 6 months that it does require some kind of hearing. But actually, there's a whole process for circumventing the hearing if you look at this bill. That is, say, it provides for the waiving of the hearing so that you don't have to go through the traumatic process of going to court. And indeed, most people who are even today held in psychiatric hospitals locally in the Dominican psych ward or the subsidiary, used to be called, Seventh Avenue Center, I guess is what it's now called, the dumping grounds where people are dumped in these board and care homes after they've been conserved. Most people don't ever get to court, really. They don't they're not particularly encouraged to do any fighting in this matter. They're encouraged to not to fight this issue. And David Bush's statements, notwithstanding David Bush's statements about you don't have to be forcibly medicated now. Yes, in many cases they can forcibly medicate you now, but they can't require once you're outside the hospital that you be forcibly medicated. But while you're in the hospital in a 72-hour hold, it's very difficult to resist forced medication. You theoretically have the right to a Reese hearing, which is a hearing which shows that you can show there's a less restrictive method of treatment, and you have some informed objection to it. But I understand 75% of those hearings are lost, even when they're held. They're not held before a judge. They're held in the hospital before a hospital administrator, and it's not. You get the benefit of the psychiatric advocate, the ombuds advocate. I think George Cavallo was doing it for a while, may still be doing it. But you don't usually win them. And then, of course, you get to try to get out of the hospital by a habeas corpus hearing. You can demand to be taken before a judge and within 48 hours in order to determine that you are not a danger to yourself, not a danger to others, and not gravely disabled. But, of course, if you're all medicated, you may have difficulty proving the case. And in many cases, they don't want to keep you anyway because the costs are so high. But as David Bush pointed out, once you have these cheap psychiatric drugs they can shoot you up with, they don't have to worry about food and shelter and things of that sort. You'll be on your own. And if you die off in a corner somewhere and you're not in the hospital, well, that's just how it goes. You know, that just happened that way. I suppose some will say there are protections if you can't do that, if you're so-called gravely disabled and unable to help yourself. But it's a real concern. I encourage people to give a call to Bruce McPherson, our local senator, to say no to AB 1421, the forced drugging bill coming up for a vote tomorrow in his Appropriations Committee in the Senate, the State Senate. Again, the phone number for that is 425-0401, 425-0401. And we're going to do a little demonstration call here, and I'll show you how you might want to do that.
Ringing here on the phone. We're ringing into Bruce McPherson's office. Let's see if we get some kind of answer, if he actually has an answering machine. He is, after all, our state senator and should have, shouldn't he?
Thank you for calling the office of Senator Bruce McPherson. We're not able to take your call at this time, so please leave a message and we will get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you.
Hey, Bruce, this is Robert Norris calling in. I'm concerned about a bill coming before your Appropriations Committee on Monday. It's AB 1421. I understand this mandates forced drugging and involuntary outpatient commitment therapy, which I think is, one, unconstitutional, and two, very expensive. They claim that there's not going to be an additional expense, but various organizations have, to me, documented otherwise, that there's a massive court cost that's hidden in here, because you're going to require hearings for these people who want them. And also, I think this is going to divert money from other voluntary programs that have been proven to work much better. I encourage you to vote against AB 1421 and to look for expanding voluntary and successful methods of helping folks with mental disabilities and mental illnesses. Thanks a lot. If you can get back to me, let me know what your vote was and what your position is on this. My phone number is 423-4833. Thanks a lot.
And kind of a rough attempt to put that forward to Bruce McPherson. There is an answering machine in place, so if you want to give a call now at 425-0401, you can. You can point out that AB 34 already allows for voluntary treatment, and it's been working well, that it costs a fraction of what this bill would be estimated to be costing in the three counties. In L.A. County alone, according to David Bush, it's going to cost $288 million to implement these mobile needles on wheels units. In New York City, it costs $6.8 million. There are lots of costs for the program that are simply not honestly being faced. And the money could be better spent in facilities that are really voluntary, because apparently the so-called success, which some claim have attended this involuntary program, are really a function of the various states opening up centers at all, voluntary or involuntary, and people come to them. So give a call to McPherson, Senator Bruce McPherson, at 425-0401, or catch him on the internet at senator.mcpherson, M-C-P-H-E-R-S-O-N, at sen.ca.gov. And you'll be glad you did. Or at least you'll be sorry you didn't, I think, if this bill passes. So you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Our phone line is 427-3772. Give us a call.
Street, rolling of the drums and the tramping of the feet, general salutes and the mothers waving we. Here comes the big parade, don't be afraid, price is paid, one more parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war, so willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. All march together, everybody looks the same, so there is no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, light the flame, one more parade. Listen for the sound and listen for the noise. Listen for the thunder of the marching boys. Few years ago, their guns were only toys. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid, price is paid, one more parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war, so willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. All march together, everybody looks the same, so there is no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, light the flame, one more parade. Medals on their coats and guns in their hands, trained to kill as they're trained to stand. 10,000 ears need only one command. Here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid, price is paid, one more parade. So young, so strong, so ready for the war, so willing to go and die upon a foreign shore. All march together, everybody looks the same, so there's no one you can blame. Don't be ashamed, light the flame, one more parade. Cold hard stares on faces so proud, kisses from the girls and cheers from the crowd. And the widows from the last war crying to their shrouds, here comes the big parade. Don't be afraid, price is paid. Don't be ashamed, war's a game, world in flames, so start the parade.
Phil Oakes, tape from California, and One More Parade. That's a timely song, even though it's 30 years old. Last time on my show, we had an interesting interview with attorney Kelly Tanalapi, who defended successfully Billy McManus in Sacramento. I mentioned that in this David Bush interview earlier. He was able to show that the necessity defense applied to him as a homeless person sleeping in a tent in Sacramento because there was no shelter available. And even though, of course, he's shown that in court, he'll probably be back again in jail or ticketed or harassed or having his stuff taken with the midnight flashlight and the midnight wake-up, which is what, of course, homeless people face across the country and in Santa Cruz. But here's an editorial from the Sacramento Bee that I began to read last time and I didn't quite finish. This time I will. Homeless Win Around. Criminalizing Homelessness Won't Work. Sacramento Bee, August 15th. The city of Sacramento prosecuted some 900 homeless people last year for illegal camping. Most of those pleaded guilty and were sentenced to time served or community service. William Billy McManus challenged his three illegal camping citations on the grounds of necessity. He argued essentially that sleeping is a necessity of life and that he had no place else to go. A jury agreed. They acquitted McManus on the first count and hung on the other two. The city is weighing whether or not to appeal. Meanwhile, news of the acquittal is spreading quickly and is bound to encourage more challenges to the city's no-camping ordinance. The acquittal seems likely to force the city to revamp its policies. Apparently, criminalizing homelessness will not save an American River Parkway increasingly overrun with illegal campers. After all, in the case the city lost involved one of Sacramento's less sympathetic homeless residents, a fixture in the community for almost two decades. And because he lives on the streets and along riverbanks, he needs them for protection. Because Sacramento shelters have no accommodation for pets, and who can blame them, he slept on the American River Parkway in violation of the city's no-camping ordinance. Right. Witnesses for McManus testified that there are some 2,000 people seeking shelter in the city of Sacramento any given night who cannot find it. Many sleep on the parkway, turning stretches of that recreational jewel into a no-man's land awash in garbage and human excrement, a haven for criminals, drug dealers, and snarling dogs. A haven for people who need a place to sleep, Sacramento Bee, but let that go. Note, however, that at least the Sacramento Bee gives numbers of homeless people that are without shelter. You don't find that in the Sentinel. Continuing, no doubt about it, illegal campers pose a threat to public health and safety. The city is right to try and remove them. But until the city provides alternatives to illegal camping, either enough shelter beds or permanent affordable housing, the jury seemed to say, homeless people have no reasonable choices and therefore can't be removed. That means the parkway will remain at risk. Even if the city appeals the jury's verdict and wins, it loses. Homeless people won't go away. They will burrow deeper into the riverbanks, or move upstream a little, or under freeway overpasses, or onto bus benches and doorways. There are better strategies to protect the parkway, the public, and poor people without a place to sleep at night. First, the city and Sacramento County need to flood the parkway's most troubled stretches with rangers and with a host of legal activities, including guided hikes, nature trails, kayaking classes, picnics, day camps for schools, and scout trips. Then, not just Sacramento, but the entire region needs to provide more shelters and more permanent homes that destitute illegal campers can afford. The region's mayors are set to meet next month. Affordable housing ought to be at the top of their agenda. The jury is not still out on that question. Ironically, however, and that was a story, by the way, from the Sacramento Bee of August 15th, an editorial, actually, by the Sacramento Bee after that successful McManus victory in court. Here's a story from 2 weeks before. County targets illegal camps. Deputies are on the lookout for unsanitary conditions at camps used by the homeless, by Roger Phelps, Sacramento Bee staff writer. Even as consultants warn Placer County to increase indoor shelter for homeless people, officials are considering closing tent camps that shelter people outdoors. Responding to two complaints, sheriff's deputies July 17th evicted several homeless people from a camp on Placer County property. Officials are investigating whether other homeless camps cause legal violations that could justify evicting people and, said Sheriff's Captain Rick Armstrong, the camps are all on private property and some have prompted complaints. Residents of a camp in a corner of the county's DeWitt Center property in North Auburn said deputies and county crews July 17th confiscated and hauled away possessions worth $600 to $1,000 after using a bulldozer to pile the items onto a truck bed. We lost everything, tents, stoves, sleeping gear, food, personal papers, including identification, a watch, and medications, said former camp resident Robert Borden. That was just my girlfriend and I. Another man also lost his property, a cot, cooking stuff, a tarp, and a sleeping bag. Armstrong said complaints alleging unlawful disposal of sewage caused a nuisance for nearby businesses. He said the incident served as a reminder of complaints about other homeless camps. An update of the housing element for the county general plan says the county lacks a permanent shelter and has an inadequate motel voucher program for homeless people, particularly those who are not part of a family unit. A soon-to-be-released census of Placer County homeless people conducted by a consultant under contract with the city of Roseville shows a sizable jump in numbers from the estimated 1,000 homeless people surveyed 2 years ago, people familiar with the draft census said. Specific numbers were not released because the final version of the report has not been completed. The camps are, quote, behind any of the shopping centers anywhere there are fields adjacent, Armstrong said. If you get in a helicopter, you can see them from the air. Deputies used a bulldozer and didn't permit camp residents at the DeWitt Center site to remove their belongings because of health concerns and because residents had previous instructions to vacate, Armstrong said. Interrupting, you really can't have it both ways, can you? Either there were health concerns, and it doesn't matter if they warned them before or not, but you can't claim, well, they had a chance to pick up their belongings before, but now they're health concerns. Obviously, there were health concerns before, if there were any legitimate health concerns. But in fact, the use of so-called health concerns is often a pretext to close down these areas where homeless people gather, not just to be able to sleep, but to be able to sleep with some safety, since they can watch each other's stuff and keep an eye out for the kind of hate crimes that you heard David Bush talking about earlier. He said deputies followed procedures that are standard at the county jail for preventing spread of communicable disease, wearing gloves and masks to avoid coming into direct contact with individuals, clothing, or possessions. Deputies in previous visits to the campsite found no evidence of latrines being dug for sanitary purposes, Armstrong said. The lack of latrines prompted the complaint that led to the evictions. One wonders how much it would cost to put in a porta potty in that area compared to the amount of expense being used to fund the sheriff's salaries, pay for the court costs of the tickets, and so forth. Residents were first told to vacate June 10th, Armstrong said. However, Tex, a camp resident who declined to give her last name, said she first heard of the notice only hours before the eviction occurred. Armstrong said deputies visited the camp at 9:12 a.m., repeated previous instructions to leave, and returned at 1:50 p.m. with the bulldozer. For the rest of the homeless camps around the county, conditions that could lead to eviction include unlawful disposal of sewage, littering, illegal camping, and trespassing, Armstrong said. An investigation has been launched with the intent of driving people out of any camps deemed unsanitary enough that the health of camp residents or passers-by is threatened, he said. There's going to be more, Armstrong said. We're going to take other camps on if we find them in violation of the law. The driving force is the sewage. Private property owners initially are responsible for preventing offenses on their properties, so the county will notify an owner if it finds violations at a site, Armstrong said. After that, deputies will evict people as they deem necessary, he said. Authors of the general plan's housing element advised county officials their applications for grants to assist the homeless show gaps in shelter and care services. To meet state requirements, Placer County over the next 7 years needs to provide 1,800 units for families of four, making $45,000 or less annually, and 2,200 units for families making $28,000 or less per year. Advocates for affordable housing said they were not pleased by the prospects of more crackdowns on homeless camps. That's shocking, said Mark Bledsoe, housing resource specialist for Placer Independent Resource Services in Auburn. Rather than provide services, it seems they want to run people off. Placer County speaks about $250,000 a year on vouchers for motel stays for homeless people. It spends that much, that is. The county has no plans to create a permanent shelter, but it ought to do more to assist people who are homeless, said Maureen Bauman, director of the county's adult system of care. Homelessness is a statewide issue, Bauman said. Permanent housing is the true solution. So what can we in Santa Cruz, city and county, do to stop authorities from destroying the temporary makeshift homes of people who have no other place to go, and who do so, of course, in the midst of a housing crisis, a rent escalation, and indeed county violations of its own housing element, so that it hasn't even attempted to provide the low-income housing necessary. You have a situation essentially of criminal abuse of poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz, and systematic hate crime violation of basic civil rights under the sleeping ban. And now, of course, you have the Constitution being shredded downtown with the downtown ordinances. And that also affects street performers, as we've found in the last conversation with Tom Noddy, and political tailors. But, of course, the real question is for those who are out there of necessity, homeless people, who need to have the support from those of us who are in houses to be able to stand up and to fight back. And that's a real problem and a real question. I'm going to encourage people to come down tomorrow, Monday at 4:30. Take a look at some videos there at the corner of Cooper and Pacific, right across from the Cinema 9. See what you can do. See how you can volunteer to help Downtown for All and other organizations working to save public spaces. I see this as a way of helping to stop the erosion of basic homeless civil rights. Landslide erosion, it looks like. So that's something that needs to be done. And if you want to talk about it, again, we got an open line, 427-3772, if you want to give us a call. So maybe you do.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, thanks so much for your program. It's so much needed, and I just want to remind everyone that we're all just a paycheck away. And in fact, I'm out camping right now in my vehicle, and I'm having a heck of a time. Yesterday, all the campsites were filled, and I can't afford a hotel, and so I was forced to sleep in my car, which is something that really never happened before. And I was scared, I was scared, and I thought, this is America, and this is the what we've come to, and it's nasty, it's not kind, it's not nice, and I'm so glad that you're trying to do something about it.
What's your first name, caller?
Sally.
And are you a newcomer to Santa Cruz, or are you?
No, I'm just taking a vacation, and I decided I just put my finger to the wind, and I said I'm going, and I packed up my little car, and I was planning to. I've got my tent, and I was going to hit all the parks along the way, and I really don't know where I'm going, and I happened to end up in Santa Cruz on my way from L.A., and and I liked it here, and I was enjoying Henry Callan Park yesterday. And then, lo and behold, there wasn't any campsites available. And I got a taste of what it's like, and I just want people to understand that it's really just one paycheck away for everybody. And I really think that we need to have these people that are making these laws, they need to be homeless for 1 week. They really do. If they're going to advocate this kind of treatment of their citizens, they need, it must be an enforced thing, almost like a law, that they need to be homeless for a week, and they need to understand what is going on out here.
I like that idea, and of course, often you'll see homeless people go to city council, not often, but a number of times, and have suggested this to city council members, that what they need to do is try it for a week. And to my knowledge, only one person, one politician I know has ever done it, and that was a Santa Barbara politician, council member or a mayor back in the 80s. It just, it's something that kind of people like to play around with, but, even as I've said on other shows, even those two council members who opposed most of the downtown ordinances, the laws that criminalize sitting 14 feet from a building and allow police to pick up an unattended backpack or suitcase on the sidewalk, even if it's not blocking the sidewalk, that criminalize hacky sack and frisbee and essentially, homeless removal laws is what they are. The word homeless just wasn't used, even by those council members. They're sort of afraid to mention it. It's an embarrassment, And it's really refreshing to get a call from someone who, you're learning firsthand what it's like to be a homeless person.
I'm learning that it's a crime not to have a lot of money. If you can't afford a hotel because you can't find a campsite, you are a criminal. And if you don't find a place to sleep during the night, you're a criminal, you know, that where they can't find you. And I just think that, you know, this country and all the people in it, we have to have integrity. And I think what's behind this is hotels, motels, camping grounds, residential people who feel they've worked very hard, rightly so, very hard all their life. They've worked for their money, and so they don't like to have to support people that are having a good time enjoying themselves, not having to work, because really work is quite a distasteful thing for most of us. I mean, the jobs are boring, and the whole thing has no heart to it, you know. I mean, what do? We go to our little computers all day long, and you know, we just, there's no heart to the corporate world that we have helped create. But I've been thinking about this during the evening, and I thought, you know, what could homeless do? There's a lot of city projects that the city can't afford to do. They can't hire people. They need volunteers. I just thought Henry Cowell, they need volunteers to work there. Perhaps they could work out a deal with the homeless that, you know, aren't so drugged or alcoholed out that they can't function, but the ones that can and really are looking for work and all that could do some voluntary work in exchange for having a camp set up for them and a shower and things like that, you know, kind of like what Goodwill does, and believe in the power of work and that kind of thing.
You know, go ahead, Sally.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ironically, that provision, well, there's a group called Camp Paradise. I don't know if you've heard about it. You probably haven't in L.A., which was homeless people who set up a campsite along the San Lorenzo River, just right in the city limits, but sort of right across from the freeway, but in a sort of a secluded area. And they were commended by many of their neighbors for kind of policing the area and driving away the hard drug dealers and serving as a kind of a refuge for people. Like, people came in and their cars would park nearby and sleep there at night, or come down and pitch a tent with them. But of course, the hard-line conservatives, who call themselves now progressives on the city council, one of whom was running for re-election, Tim Fitzmaurice, wanted to crack down, and they did, and they eventually drove them away. The camp was flooded out, but they were not given an alternate site. But before that happened, shortly after that happened, the city passed a resolution that said, in essence, that there was an exception for, they allowed people to go to the parks, and if they were part of an organization that had $1 million worth of insurance and various other kinds of hoops that they could jump through, and they could, you know, do what you suggest, which is, they were, you know, beautification type programs in the parks and camp there for several weeks. But of course, the hurdles were made so high that no one has been able to use that program. And you know, your proposal is still out there, and I think still a good one.
Well, you know, I think that was a step in the right direction. And of course, there's hurdles for everything. There's hurdles for people starting a business, and there's hurdles for this, but it doesn't mean that we give up, because once that's in place, that is going to be a program that takes off all over the nation. And as more and more people become homeless because they can't afford the high rent, and as jobs are taken over by robotics, which is happening a great deal, more and more people are finding it's musical chairs out here. And all of a sudden, whoops, the music is playing, and guess what? You don't have a home. And it's happened to so many, you know, people from all walks of life that, you know, depend on the next paycheck, that there's thousands and thousands of us, and they're going to have to do something. And either they're going to have to get rid of us by putting us in these camps, you know, saying that we're too drugged out to deal with, and then we disappear. I don't know. I just don't know. But I really feel that the climate here is the people are compassionate. It's the government that I worry about. They're not compassionate anymore. And they're falling, too. Oh, guess what? Those people in Enron, you know, some of them, I hope they should be homeless instead of getting all the millions that they get. And maybe that's going to happen in the near future. I don't know.
Hear, hear. You're going to be around for a while, or are you leaving town tonight?
Well, it looks like I'm going to try to go back up to the campsite up there on Sunday, so a lot of people should be leaving. But I just want to let people know that You know, if you're on a limited income and you only make $2,000 a month, you know, all the campsites are incredibly high, $12 a night. I mean, please, we pay taxes. You know, we pay taxes to buy these lands. Our forefathers did. And they should be costing us $3 and $4 a night. And it's just everything's becoming so militant, and I don't know. I, you know.
Well, come on down tomorrow if you're still around, and you can talk to some folks who've had similar experiences, and maybe get a sense of what's going on. We'll be having a meeting downtown at 4:30 on Pacific Avenue, across from the Cinema 9, showing some videos and having some folks do some soapboxing and speaking out. You're invited anyway, as is everyone else listening to this broadcast.
Well, this is what you're doing is so incredible because it concerns everyone out here. I mean, you may not think that you could ever be homeless, and I never thought that there would come a day when I'd have to sleep in my car. I mean, I have a little tiny Geo, and it's packed full. And I had nowhere, and I mean, it was just really scary. I had to hide. I had to kind of, ooh, it was just creepy. I shouldn't have had to do that. That's not what America's about.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Hope to see you.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, you will, if I'm here.
All righty, and keep listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
And phone lines are open, 427-3772. Really good to get new callers. Thank you for calling in. Looks like here's another call. If you want to call off-air, by the way, 423-HUFF is a number to call, and leave me a message there, and I'll get back to you. 423-4833.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hi, I had a couple of questions. I was wondering what the status was on the chalking, because I'm a really big fan. I've been walking around town and seeing it everywhere and loving it. And I know there was a city council meeting on it. I was wondering what their status was.
Sure. There's been actually no discussion of the chalking issue at city council. The word from the city attorney's office and the police department seems to be selective enforcement against some chalkers. So, for example, at least 4 people have gotten citations, Becky Johnson, local homeless activist Tim Rinker, an artist, Nathaniel Kennedy, who is an origami maker, and a friend of his, who are also chalking downtown. I have occasionally chalked on the sidewalk, I publicly confess, usually to specify where the anti-homeless laws are limiting people from, you know, putting down their butts, or putting a political display, or street performers. In fact, you'll occasionally see, as you walk along, you'll see chalked on the sidewalk, "This area becomes illegal August 23rd. And these are attempts to inform the public, by rascals such as myself, you know, what's actually going on. It's a really kind of a cheap way of letting people know it's harmless, it wears away, and it doesn't kill trees, which I'm often vastly criticized for because I turn out a lot of flyers. But the answer is the chalking cases are still going to court. They're going to be coming back in September. Becky Johnson and Tim Rinker are being defended by attorney Ed Fry, and he's already filed a legal brief defending them. Chalking has in other cities, under other laws, been found to be constitutional. That is to say, when they were attempted to arrest them, not only were the arrests thrown out, but the officers were civilly fined in court later, and the money was recovered either from the police officer or from the city. But, unfortunately, that has not stopped Santa Cruz authorities from going after people here, and the Santa Cruz law is different than the law in Berkeley, where this stuff was, you know, successfully, the civil lawsuits got money. So if you want more information, perhaps we can get an update from Becky Johnson, if she's listening in. She's an activist who is charged with chalking. I might even have her some of the legal brief. She might be willing to read some of that on the air, and perhaps we can do that for you. That was question number one. Did you have any other questions?
Well, keep on chalking. And the other thing I was wondering about is, I know with the economy the way it is, apparently land has become the safe haven, and that includes real estate. So I was really curious if there are any statistics on how many houses are owned by a person that owns more than one house. By that I mean, how spread out is the ownership? Is it a number of people or just a few people renting to everyone else?
You know, that's a very good question, and I would encourage you to take it up with HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We're always kind of got little projects like that in the hopper, trying to get people to volunteer to do some research on that. And the answer to your question is, I don't know. but I would like to know.
How does one volunteer?
You give a call to 423-HUFF at 423-HUFF. That's where it is. And we have meetings every Wednesday morning at Baker's Square Restaurant on Ocean at 8:30 in the morning. If you up here, if you hate meetings, just call in and just say you want to help out, but you don't want to come to any stupid meetings. But that's one way to do it. Another thing, I mean, just getting back to your chalking, I really encourage everyone out there to use chalk, you know, and not to deface the sidewalk, but to use it as it was intended to be used, which is as a multi-purpose use. And use erasable chalk, you know, don't spray on the sidewalk, don't acid the windows, let the community know what they need to know, because it's really the poor man's way of getting a message out.
Cool, well, thanks for the show.
Sure, thank you.
Phone lines again are open, 427-3772. Really like those new callers. I'm going to actually try to get some old voices on the air, too. Call activist Peter Marin in Santa Barbara for my next show. Peter Marin is a poet, a very articulate writer, and astute politically. He's been able to get the mayor and others in Santa Barbara around, kind of wrapped around proposals to decriminalize sleeping and living for people in RVs by using the very relevant but not often used hook that for most Californians, and who knows, probably for most Americans, an affordable housing these days is a vehicle. That's really what it boils down to. So vehicles aren't just sort of opportunities for joyride and orgies and drug parties and et cetera, but they are literally places where you have to live, that you don't have any other choices, and that's what they have to be acknowledged as that. It's not some sort of wild and crazy free lifestyle. It is rather your attempt to live in a society that is definitely not free and that charges huge amounts of money, particularly in coastal towns. Some more updates while we're waiting for that mass of incoming phone calls, if you want to call in. Norman Friedberg, the man who I've termed the breadcrumb terrorist, that's the guy who was arrested for feeding the pigeons at a Food Not Bombs rally on June 24th, and then when he resisted arrest because he was ticketed in spite of the fact that others had begun to clean up the breadcrumbs on the ground that the officers insisted was littering, and he became belligerent and fought back, and he was eventually... he's now charged with multiple felonies. He's still in jail. I called there a couple days ago. He has no bail because they're holding him on a no-bail warrant. He sounds like he's a number of sandwiches short of a full picnic basket, if you'll forgive me for saying that, based upon reports I heard from activist Becky Johnson, who went to court and actually saw one of his hearings, although there was another hearing of his last week, which I don't know if anyone got to. I did speak to his public defender, an investigator for his public defender, who is trying to get together information by witnesses who saw what went on. He faces quite a trial coming up, and that if you have any information, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's the police assault on Norman Friedberg. It happened actually in front of Noah's Bagels, Pete's Coffee area, on Monday, June 24th, I believe it was, way back when, about 4:30 in the afternoon. And it's part of this general crackdown downtown where the police increase the tension and then blame everybody else for violent confrontations that occur, and of course use it to bolster the police budget while the rest of the social service budget gets trashed as the utility tax gets dumped, because the city council isn't spending the utility tax in a way that really gives direct benefits to homeless and other poor people, but funds, unfortunately, middle-class jobs in the middle in numerous cases. I'm going to be going to talk to Sergeant McMahon next week, probably. She has asked me to come in to interview me on two complaints I made to the Citizens Police Review Board, which immediately gets sent to the Internal Affairs Division of the Police Department. Those complaints concerned a driving while black arrest, where an individual with a supposedly loud car radio was stopped for excessive noise and given a ticket. The man was a black guy who was stopped by Officer Bynes, Wendy Bynes, who was the same officer who ticketed Becky Johnson for chalking on the sidewalk. But talking to other witnesses there, specifically Sherry Connable, I learned that Bynes had previously been harassing people for putting their foot on the cement edge of a planter. That's those little two or three inch high planters that surround a lot of the trees or vegetation downtown. They are illegal to sit on or to put your foot on, even though people do, and it hadn't been enforced except where the police are going after the New Leaf Market Borders group of people that they consider to be a particular menace, and which these people eventually, of course, became the basis for the anti-homeless laws downtown. No hacky sacking, no putting down your backpacks, anything to get rid of these terrorist hippies who are just a disgrace to our entire community and so forth in the eyes of police and merchants. Anyway, the complaint I'm going to be taking concerned Officer Bynes and what she did there, which was she seemed to be harassing a black driver. And I interviewed him, too, briefly, but we'll be taking that up tomorrow. I should say not tomorrow, but sometime in the next few days.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
I wanted to compliment that woman who called in, I don't know, I guess about two calls ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to remind her that this isn't America, and this is Americo. And it just gets colder, and that's why around the world people hate us, and they call us the evil empire and the great Satan.
I see. Well, you got a point there. You okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So I know Ed, you are going to be going to court on a camping ticket. You also live in your vehicle.
Yeah.
And do you want when is that going to happen?
Next month.
Okay, because I want you to let us all know when that happens so we can come to court. I understand your attorney may be mounting for you a necessity defense. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of hopeless. I've been listening to you all morning, right? Then I had to get out. And, this morning, Tom, I was appreciating what Tom had to say early on.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. It's like the woman said that's a camper. You know, people will find out, down the road. And what's that AB...
1421.
Yeah.
I'll make another pitch for that one, too. No, I encourage you to you have an attorney willing to use a necessity defense, please, please use it if you can. I mean, you may have other...
Oh, that's what I'm intending
right.
on doing.
Because you're in a position, you've got dogs in your vehicle, it's very analogous to what happened to Bill McManus in Sacramento and to Ridley and Cooper down in Santa Barbara. They were found that the necessity did rule the case and that camping tickets could not be issued. We need such a ruling here, or we need a superior court to strike down, a compliant politician like Commissioner Joseph, who...
Meanwhile, they're listening on the air, and they already know, so...
They knew before.
It's just kind of, it's a rude awakening, but, I always suspected as much. It's kind of like there's something wrong with human nature, and there's times I'm ashamed to be a human, thought of as a human, just like I'm ashamed to be thought of as an American. But straight up, so ashamed.
I think it's not the human nature; it's the institutions we live in.
No, there's something, Robert. It gets into the psychology of scapegoatism, and there's something about the vileness of human nature. At least Americans. I've never been around the world. I'd like to, and then I could find out. But it's like we don't care what's happening to the other guy, the small guy or whatever, just so they don't knock on our front door, right? And there's something disgusting about hypocrites that I've had my face shoved in it, so therefore I understand both sides, kind of. But there's a vileness of human nature. I've gone both ways. I've gone Ayn Rand, sometimes I hear Stan Montes say, man is inherently evil, and I'm inclined to go with inherently evil.
No, I can't agree with
you. Without checks and balances on our ass.
I think you're definitely evil, though. You're clearly part of the evil axis.
I smell evil through the phone line, so what can
well,
I say?
I'll let
but
you go.
Anyway... Hey. You know what I mean? It's disheartening. And look at Tom. All those hours and fucking months and years and fucking years, you put into it. And look at, they just like slap us in the face. It's just like the County Board of Supervisors appointing themselves a $30,000 a year raise.
I hear you.
And meanwhile, the Emmeline Street Clinic is going to be spring. It's like the article with Scott Kennedy saying, well, if the utility tax is taken away, Michael Schmidt in there, I forget what article that was. We're going to take away the Loud Nelson Center, the swimming pool, and something else. And it's like, look what they do. Instead of cutting off big old fat salaries like a Dick Wilson, for lifer, with his 150 or whatever, or start slimming it down, look what they do.
I hear you. Thanks for calling, Ed.
Yeah.
All righty. Keep it up.
But I think that people do make a difference, and I guess I disagree with that here. I don't think it's human nature. I think it's the nature of the conditions we find ourselves under. I think people can be very, very good to each other. I mean, they can be very, very bad, too. But the main forces that are on us that dehumanize us aren't really human beings acting spontaneously or out of their feelings. It's people who are put in positions where we're turned against each other, and we're forced to engage in shit work for crap wages, and we agree to laws and conditions that we never should have agreed to. In fact, we never had any real discussion about what was going on there and what should be the case. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, listening to that infernal optimist, Uncle Robert, here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. Phone line in is 427-3772. There's elections coming up, and now that's a really ideal time to raise these issues, because in election times, even individuals who are normally completely marginalized, like myself, Steve Argue, Phil Bear, Thomas Levitt, get essentially, to some extent, an equal podium with other people. We don't, of course, have the financial resources or the organization or the sentinel behind us, but if what we say is true, that is more important, isn't it? That's what counts. So, come on down tomorrow at 4:30 at Cooper and Pacific, and right across from the Cinema 9, and see some interesting videos on police abuse locally, and hear some interesting voices, Steve Argue and Thomas Levitt, and perhaps Phil Bear, and certainly me ranting away. And give a call to Senator Bruce McPherson while there is still time. It's 24 hours before that vote tomorrow, maybe less, in the Senate Appropriations Committee to stop forced drugging, stop needles on wheels. That's AB 1421. Just say no to 1421, and the phone number to call is 425-0401. 425-0401. Yeah. It's interesting. Thomas Levitt perhaps can give us an update on Santa Monica. He is from Santa Monica, and he's in touch with them. He did point out to me that the two Green Party members of the Santa Monica City Council voted against the directive to get the city attorney to draw up laws against outsiders feeding people in the Santa Monica parks. It was a 4-2 vote against it. That is good news. I was also asked to pass on Nathaniel Kennedy's phone number. It is, of course, the payphone of the Dominican Hospital male psych ward. He has been apparently jailed at the psych ward. I'm not quite sure exactly what the charge is. He was trying to run a campaign for city council. I don't think he made the final cut, partially because he was being held in the Dominican Hospital. The phone number there, if you want to talk to him and get the straight story, is 476-9928. 476-9928. If you miss any of these numbers, you can always just remember one, the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. I was wondering if you know any more, other than what's been printed in the Sentinel, about this Aldo Giacchino and his lawsuit against city council candidates Matthews and Rotkin. And if you do, or I would encourage you to try and get him on the air for an interview. I'd like to hear more about that. I'm at work, so I don't have time to stay on the phone and
sounds good.
Blab my own opinions. But yeah, if you could comment on that, thanks.
Sure.
Bye.
I will. Thank you.
And that really is a breaking story. As some of you may know, Aldo Giacchino is a council candidate. I don't know anything about the man at all, except that he's gotten two stories in the Sentinel in 3 days, if not more, claiming that Matthews and Rotkin, recycled candidates par extraordinaire, to the right of the current city council, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, and Porter, and Riley, which is pretty far to the right, I got to tell you. He has argued that they aren't eligible to run because there has to be a 2-year break, and a month or a week short of 2 years is not enough. It has to be an actual 2-year break, and that is currently being adjudicated in court.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. My name is Leela Percival, and I'm calling from Dominican Hospital Mental Health Unit.
Oh, great. You're on the women's side, though, not the men's side.
Yeah.
Speak up if you can.
Well, all I've got to say is I think that's a horrible atrocity, this new law that is being proposed, and that it sounds like something straight out of Nazi Germany.
Have you been listening to our show?
No, I haven't. I don't have my radio, but a friend of mine told me what was going on.
Now that's great. I appreciate your calling. And how are people being treated on the women's side of the Dominican psych ward?
Well, I gotta say, they listen in on our calls, so I have to be careful what I say.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd really like to see you if you'd like to come and see me this afternoon.
Mm.
Supposedly my last day.
Don't know if I can do that, but what we can do is we can put out the phone number so people can call you if you'd like to talk to people.
Well, I'm awful tired from the medication
mm-hmm.
that I'm forced to take, but I just wanted to say that little bit.
Well, listen, thank you, and I appreciate you're talking about the downtown ordinances, the anti-homeless laws?
Yes.
Wow. Well, let's talk more when you get out, or who knows, maybe they'll...
I finally got my knee replacement.
That's good. That's good.
Very painful.
That's not so good.
But I just think it's an atrocity, this law that's being proposed, and so, right on.
Well, if you get out tomorrow, come on down to Cooper and Pacific at 4:30, that's right across from the Cinema 9. We're going to be having some videos and doing some speaking, and Food Not Bombs will be serving some food.
We'll see.
All right. Thank you.
Adios.
Adios.
Wow. It's very impressive. It takes some courage to call from inside a psych ward. And apparently without a radio actually there with her to be listening to. Thank you, and please feel free to give a call now. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Another case coming up that people are probably going to be interested in is the Norris obstructing the sidewalk case. That's me. I'm Robert Norris, and I was arrested back in January for having a table near New Leaf Market where I was asking and still ask that people boycott New Leaf Sushi Now and Alibaba's Cafe for privatizing the sidewalk, for setting up a fence there. And there was a lot of, I think, a lot of people signed petitions, and a lot of people agreed with my concerns, but Matisse Selman of Sushi Now filled out a citizen's arrest form, had me arrested for, quote, blocking the sidewalk, and Sergeant Baker had me actually taken into custody. He seems to go above and beyond the call of duty. He's had me taken into custody on three occasions on the last three times he's arrested me. None of the charges have stood up in court. This one won't stand up in court and will result in a civil lawsuit. You can't bust someone for obstructing the sidewalk if they're at a political table, ironically. That's an exemption to that particular ordinance. I guess you can charge them with something else, but you can't charge them with that. And it's ironic that they're still pursuing me on that case, and it shows, I think, clearly a political harassment, and that they're singling an activist out to go after an activist they don't like. Also, if you look at the videos that we finally got from the police department, you see that there's no blockage. The traffic is continuing to go by back and forth, even throughout the entire period where I was supposedly blocking the sidewalk. So it's completely bogus, and it's coming up for trial in September, and then there'll be a civil trial in federal court later where we will sue the city for damages and an injunction to stop this, because we've got to discourage this kind of harassment. That's what this is all about. I also ran into Jason, also known as James LeGambit, downtown. Jason is the fellow you may remember who Sergeant Baker lifted up his this diabetic's insulin needles and shouted, "Do we want this sort of thing downtown? Is this the sort of thing we want?" And then had him arrested after having stopped him for tarot card or spiritual reading. And illegally searched him, and then took him to jail. He was held in jail without his medicine, then taken by ambulance to Dominican Hospital. He was finally released without his property, and then he was held another 4 days on a false name charge, because he gave a false name. He admitted it. He was he had broken parole on a marijuana sales beef back in New Hampshire, as he told it to me. And Baker apparently tried as much as he could to get the authorities to come pick him up from New Hampshire, but they weren't interested. So he was released. He's back on the streets, and he's still trying to get his property back from the Santa Cruz Police Department. He's supposed to have met with Baker yesterday. Perhaps he's gotten his property back. Sergeant Baker is a sergeant with shorts, sort of a short fellow with a mustache on the mall. He is notorious in my book for harassing not only me, but other people repeatedly. You can sometimes see him at city council. He's often the officer there. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, when's your court date?
I don't have a court date yet. It's actually in the motion stage.
Oh, boy. Okay. Hey, you know, it'd be nice. This is some grim stuff today. You know, it'd be nice to hear from Theodora.
Well, call her up. Tell her to call in. Theodora calling. Theodora is, of course, the woman who's been fighting
for...
She's
probably depressed.
She's fighting for marijuana decriminalization, and she's been a fighter for, medical marijuana and other things, too.
Yeah, I always like hearing her for some reason.
She's a sweet...
She's probably depressed as we speak right now, you know? It's like, this is some grim news.
Yeah,
news.
Well, at least people are talking.
That's true.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So, I'm still proceeding with my project of trying to make a chronology of harassment downtown as it happens. And it's really too big a job for me to handle alone. That's one of the things that you listeners out there can help with, one, by calling in and saying when and where you saw the harassment. You may not even know who the people were, who the police officers were, but give as much of a description as you can as to what happened where and when. And do that on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Because the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, or now I guess I have to call it the Citizens Police Review Board because they're actually doing something right for once, passed unanimously a call for a public hearing. They're going to have a public hearing on the police harassment and selective enforcement that's been happening downtown, which was the main concern of a plurality of people at the Riley Porter Committee hearings. That's the committee that gave us the downtown ordinances. Instead of having ordinances to stop police harassment, or to, should we say, turn back the anti-homeless...